Now, as I said, my apologies for not speaking about the topic that is announced, and essentially that's because the museums where I work is undergoing a massive redevelopment, and I have done my homework about the topic that I wanted to speak upon, but I wasn't confident enough that I would be able to present it in a PowerPoint or in a discussion form. Having done the homework, I will appreciate if anyone has questions about that topic, which was going to be money, the use of money, and how temples are sponsored in particular areas in Deccan. I was concentrating on Maharashtra. I would be very happy to have conversation about it. The core element of the core aspect of that paper was that if temples are being built, and if people are sponsoring it, there are lots of references that people give money in forms of coins and as endowments, as deposits which accrue interest. Why there are no coins? I mean, anyone who's familiar with medieval Indian history would know that there is a perception that there are no coins there. There is a paucity of coins. So what is going on? Why on one hand we find references of money use, quite advanced money use in terms of, as I said, banking and everything, and on the other hand there is a kind of perceptible or at least an opinion about lack of coins. Since this was, as I said, I was not prepared to do it, I went by Himanshu's original suggestion, which was to talk about coins and icons, which is about divine representations on Indian coins. And here again, drawing from Professor Flood's introduction, I will have pointers as to what texts tell us about certain iconic aspects and what do we see from coins in its sort of as a sort of broader backdrop of that. Showing divinities on coins has been was a very common phenomenon in ancient world, and here we see coin from sort of three major non-Indian civilizations: the Greek, the Roman, and the Iranian or the Sasanian. And there's Athena on the coins of Athens. There is this goddess of fortune sitting, or Fortuna, sitting on the reverse of the Roman coin, and here. On the reverse, the king is receiving an object to legitimize his sovereignty from Anahita, the Iranian fertility goddess. So people of other cultures have used gods and goddesses on their coins in various contexts. That shows that Athena was the city, the goddess of the city of Athens. Fortuna, goddess of plenty, is quite appropriate on a gold coin, and here there is a relationship between the goddess and king, that the goddess is actually giving him the right of kingship. So that kind of articulation of gods and goddesses was always present in the ancient world. In the specific Indian context, the earliest Indian coins, which were entirely symbolic. We don't know the exact meanings of these symbols, but there is a room to believe that some of these symbols end up being attributes of gods and goddesses. And in that respect, as you see on this particular coin, this is dated to about 3rd century BC, there is a chakra here. So we might think that this is subsequently becomes the attribute of Krishna and Vishnu, etc. So the articulation of certain divinities was entirely done in symbolic forms on these earliest coins. Similarly, the uninscribed coins which are kind of roughly contemporary with a slightly later first century BC kind of period have these various symbols which are put in a kind of a symbolic program, and that perhaps had some context, a particular divine context about it, saying that this was a particularly divine tree, there was this particular open cross symbolized a sacred water tank, the sacred hill with a crescent on top of it, the the elephant symbolizes kingship, etc., etc. So the articulation of divinities was entirely done through symbols, and the tradition is seen continued in first or second centuries AD, where one of the sides of the coins is majorly symbolic, whereas the other side has kind of, you know, anthropomorphic and zoomorphic icons. That's the coin of the tribe of the Kunindas in Himachal Pradesh, present-day Himachal Pradesh, going back to about 1st century AD. So that's from 3rd century BC to 1st century AD, you have a kind of a mixture of an iconic and iconic divine presences. Having talked about it, this is a quite a recent discovery, and I thought it would be appropriate to show you this slide, because this wasn't known until 8 months or 1 year back. And this particular group was found in Mathura, and it appeared on the trade. And for the first time, we have symbols which, you know, which probably are the earliest Indian representations of Indic deities. Here, this is the Panchmark coin, so there are lots of symbols on one side, and on the other side there's a single symbol. The single symbol is very clearly an ithyphallic object, a person, holding a kamandalu and with a jata on his head. So quite clearly a Shiva-like figure, whether it is Shiva or not, we can talk about it, but it's quite like, fits the iconography of Shiva quite well. On the obverse, one of the punches shows a human figure. This is half cut, unfortunately. If you see on certain coins, you can see the entire punch, and in that case, he has two legs down here, the torso, the head, and in one of his hands, he holds an upright plow. So that's a plow here that he sort of holds up as his attribute, and by that again, we can attribute it quite certainly to Balarama. So these are probably dated to about 180-200 BC and immediately post-Mauryan period, and probably are the earliest representations on coins of the Indic goddesses. At the same time, there was something else happening in northwest of India, which was in close contact with the Greek world through Gandhara. And the Greeks had their own style and tradition in terms of divine representation. This is a coin of an Indo-Greek king, named Antimachus, and obviously these coins primarily show Greek divinities on them. So that's Nike up on the coin of Antimachus. That's the coin of the Indo-Scythian ruler Azalissus, and which was a successor state to the Indo-Greeks. And on the reverse, you see Tyche and Zeus, which are again coming from the Greek tradition. But what happens in this case is quite interesting, because as the Greeks come in, they start getting assimilated or, you know, incorporating ideas from the Indic pantheon. And for the first time on the coin of Agathocles, who is dated roughly to about 180-260 BC, we find the representations of two very clearly identifiable Indic icons. And here it is the two of the Pancharatra icons, that is Chakra Vasudev Krishna and Balarama holding the plow, quite in a similar fashion as we saw on the Panchmark coins, holding it upright, and the staff or the musala in the other hand. So there's Sankarsana Balarama and Vasudev Krishna on the coins of an Indo-Greek king, which is a good example of how these cultures were being blended together. This sort of things, this sort of blend continues beyond the obvious. Now, Balarama and Krishna on Indo-Greek coins were very identifiable. But here is something strange happening. This is apparently a Zeus. And he holds a Nike in his hand, which is a very, very Greek thing. Zeus holding Zeus Nike for us. He carries the Nike in his hand. But on the backdrop, there is an elephant. So what is happening? Why is there an elephant? This is again an Indo-Greek coin of Antialcidas. And the only way we can explain this kind of complex representation is the fact that Zeus, one of the main attributes of Zeus in the Greek tradition is the thunderbolt, which is Indra's attribution in the Indian tradition, and it is the elephant who is associated with the Indra. So probably when they are showing Zeus from their Greek tradition, the message to the Indian audience that this could also be the Indra. And that's why the elephant has been put there quite deliberately against its image. And this kind of subliminal messages that one gets from these iconography about the cultural syncretism is extremely interesting. And I personally don't think that that kind of messages are one can actually directly derive from textual traditions, because this is a kind of a confluence of cultures. So one aspect might go in the Greek text, one might come from the Indian text, but the actual articulation, the visual articulation that you see is quite remarkably accomplished on coins. This is a kind of a famous coin of the Indo-Greek king Agesilaus again, on the reverse showing the beautiful Indian icon of Abhisheka of Lakshmi. And again, this is a more direct evidence to the cultural confluence that was happening in, especially in the northwestern parts of the subcontinent. Now, these coins are a bit dark, and the light thing is a bit thin. But these are examples of how the kings and divinities were kind of related. And this is quite very well articulated in one particular series of ancient Indian coins, which was struck by the kingdom of Panchala, which is present-day Bareilly kind of district east of Delhi. And if you see that the coins look pretty much similar. On one side, there is, on the reverse, there is a depiction of an icon. And on the obverse, there is a square incuse in which there is a row of symbols and then the king's name is written below it. We know a lot of kings in this, and each king puts the image of the icon corresponding to his name. Most of the kings have their names ending in Mitras. So this is called Mitras of Panchala. So we have Bhumi Mitra, which shows Bhumi on the back. We have Falguni Mitra, which shows Falguni on the back. We have Agni Mitra, which shows Agni on the back with his, you know, flames coming out of his head. And interestingly, this is happening around the 1st century AD. We have a Vishnu Mitra, and this is probably the earliest representation of Vishnu that you can see around on the coins. And as you can see very clearly, it is not like the traditional icon that we readily associate with Vishnu. He does hold a wheel in his hand, and in the other hand is something like a staff. So maybe it's a primordial Vishnu where only two of these Pancharatras have come together. Maybe the Musala of Balarama and the wheel of Krishna has come together in one single icon, and that's been called a Vishnu. So chronologically, they give us a very interesting perspective on how cultic movements were facilitating a similar mixture in the visual articulation of these icons. On the other hand, we see kings coming from disparate traditions, non-Indian traditions, issuing coins in India with a different set of pantheons. So, for example, here we see coins of the Kushans, which show the Iranian gods and goddesses. Now, this is, again, extremely important from iconographic point of view, because otherwise, there is not much visual articulation available for Iranian gods and goddesses. So here, the first two coins are of Kanishka, who's dated now roughly 227-255 AD. And the second coins, the lower coins, are of his son, Uvishka. And here we see the Iranian gods Ruaspa, which is a god with a horse at the back. Vrethragna, whose Kushan name was Orlagno, which is inscribed next to him. The personification of good mind, which is probably one of the earliest iconic representations of a multi-handed god. He's got four hands, and in each four hands, he holds a different attributes. So it's quite interesting to know that Kushan coins, for the first time, show these multi-handed and multi-headed deities. So again, from a chronological point of view, you have a certain marker in time to study and attribute where such attributions have come from. And this is Manenti, who was an Iranian goddess, who was the wife of Vrethragna. So it's kind of a broader Iranian pantheon. Similarly, if you just concentrate on one god, within a coin series, you can see how the iconic transformation happens and what other forms the icons take. All, again, Kushan coins, the coin of Vimagadaphysis, who was the father of Kanishka, These are three coins of Huvishka, the son of Kanishka. So you're talking about 1st century AD, 2nd century AD kind of period. Here you see Shiva reclining on the bull with an erection, so it's a phallic Shiva. Here the icon is of Lakulisha, again with a prominent erection, holding different attributes in his hands. And quite interestingly, he's holding a chakra. And here again Shiva, but Shiva holding a thunderbolt. Now, I'm not personally a textual scholar, I would like to really go back to text and see how many of these attributes are actually reflected in text. How many, or what are the texts which actually describe Shiva with a wheel or Shiva with a thunderbolt? So again, quite interestingly, we get a completely different perspective from what we generally would associate with. And this last point shows Shiva and Uma. But if you see the Uma, the label identifies her as Uma, but she looks exactly like the Iranian goddess Nana, because her attributes and her style is exactly the same as you find for the Iranian goddess Nana on other Kushan forms. So what is exactly happening? Why is Nana being labeled as Uma and has been juxtaposed with Shiva? So these are very interesting iconographic questions that the coins sort of pose us with. Amongst living gods, we find the Buddha being for the first time represented in its anthropomorphic form on Kushan coins. That's the famous coin that General Alexander Cunningham discovered in the stupa at Ahinpoche, currently in the British Museum collection. And these two are copper coins of Kanishka, showing the standing Buddha, which is Shakyamuni, and the seated Buddha, which is Maitreya. Both these forms are identified by label inscriptions which surround the coins. These two are in our collection in Rajpur. Another interesting instance of how icons get transposed and mixed with time is one can see from transformation about these four goddesses, Agdokshu, Nana, Durga, and Lakshmi. I chose these four coins. The first two are Kushan coins of Bhuvishka, again around sort of 2nd century AD. The second are Gupta coins, so maybe 100 years later or 150 years later. So what is happening in these 150 years? Here we have the Iranian goddess Nana sitting on a lion. And here we have the Iranian goddess of plenty called Ardokshu holding a cornucopia. On the first Gupta coin, this is the king and queen type coin issued by Samudragupta, which is around 350-ish AD. And here you see a goddess with a cornucopia seated on the lion. So obviously these two icons are getting mixed here in a strange fashion. And on the coins of his successor, Chandragupta, we find that this pretty much Lakshmi holding a lotus and a pasha, a lotus and offering coins, money with her other hand, but seated on a lion. So these, again, are quite interesting mixtures that one sees, how icons get cultic, how cults probably were getting assimilated, and how that kind of assimilation was reflected through the development of these icons. Again, that kind of evidence I very much doubt would be readily available from texts of how these transformations were actually happening. Coming to we're talking about icons and gods in general. What happens when the king declares himself as one of the gods? And one of the first kings to do that was Vimakathapisces of the Kushan dynasty, whose the inscription occurs in Kharoshthi on the rivers actually names him as Sarvaloka Ishvara Maheshwara. So he's actually calling himself a form of Shiva. But interestingly, on the obverse, he's shown as a kind of divine icon. And his divinity is indicated by the flames coming out of his shoulders. Tiny little flames come out of his shoulders. Here he's seated on a mountain, and here he's seated on a throne. But if you see very carefully, his left hand is kind of obscure. And here also. Now, this is not the obscuration of a dye. This is not something that is technologically can be attributed to the technology of manufacture. But this is quite deliberate. This is an Iranian custom of covering the left hand while in presence of divine company. He's not only shown with flames and other divine attributes. The covering of his left hand means that he is in divine company, which we can't see. There are other gods and goddesses around him. And which means he's in heaven. And these kind of small details articulate things that probably, you know, which might easily escape us. I mean, this feature was known quite recently, about 2-3 years back. All along, numismatists have thought this was a die flaw. And, you know, it was rare. And then suddenly, when a complete die study was done of these coins, they discovered that, no, this is happening in every coin that we know of this die, and it's quite intentional. The other aspect of it is that some issuing authorities in India issuing coins with gods as kings. They name, they strike the coins in the name of the gods, and they ask their coins dedicated to the gods. So the first one is the coin of the Yaudheya tribe from Himachal Pradesh again, which shows a very beautiful six-headed Kartikeya, whom the inscription surrounding the coin named as Brahmanya. And on the back, this is identified as the goddess Shashti, who is standing on a lotus. This kind of a laterally depicted lotus. And again, surrounded by symbols. This coin falls in the period where iconic and symbolic forms of divinity were being interchanged. So you find this kind of mixture of icons and symbols around it. Similarly, this coin is of the Kunenda tribe again, and where there's a Shiva with a Trishul and a battle axe depicted next to it, where the inscription identifies him as Chitreshwara, a form of Shiva. The coin struck in his name. There is no king mentioned, but it says that it's the coin of the god. The concept of Ishta Devata, or chosen deities, is quite well articulated in Gupta coins. And most Gupta coins, Gupta kings considered Lakshmi as their Ishta Devata. And it's articulated quite beautifully in the coin. These both coins are of Chandragupta II, the great Vikramaditya. And here you see her seated on a lotus, holding a lotus in her hands, and a pasha or a noose. And on the reverse, you see her standing holding on a lotus. His successor, Kumaragupta, because his name was Kumara, chose Kartikeya as his Ishta Devata. And a lot of his coins and a lot of his titles have this interesting play over his own name and the god's name. And he also struck these really remarkably beautiful coins showing Kartikeya astride the peacock on the reverse. And here the king is actually shown feeding fruit to a peacock. So there's a pun on his name and his act of kingship of giving refuge to sort of animals and creatures around him. But there's the animal that he chooses is also the favorite animal of his chosen deity, the peacock.
In 5 minutes.
Yeah. some representations later on coming of incarnations. That's Varaha there, Rama and Narsimha. This is a much later coin. This is Mysore coin of about 17th century. Rama coin is a Rajput coin of medieval India, and the boar incarnation is on the Pratihara coin. So again, chronologically, you're talking about 8th, 9th, 10th centuries, which kind of matches well with other iconic aspects of the avatars of Vishnu. Some lesser known icons, which we rarely don't find anywhere else represented, are found on coins. This is a tribal coin of the Audumbaras coming from the North Hill states, which show a Vishwamitra. And that's again a very rare thing that one doesn't usually see. And he's quite clearly labeled in Kharoshti as well, that he is Vishwamitra. The coin of the city-state of Pushkalavati in Peshawar, near Peshawar, shows this goddess called Durvasa, which is a kind of a form of Lakshmi, and also serves as this has been said by B.N. Mukherjee in one of his recent contributions. I don't personally agree, but that's the nearest it comes to an attribution. And the face of a yaksha seen on a coin of Taxila, which was probably struck by a guild. So yaksha face, who's probably Manivadra, shown on coins struck by the guild. Some examples of veneration that one sees on coins, we see on, is again a coin from Northwest, you see a goddess, a woman actually venerating a stupa or hill-like object, offering salutations. This elephant carries a little umbrella in his trunk, which is obviously carrying in towards a certain object to be venerated. He's offering an umbrella to the object of veneration. And this interesting piece shows grape sort of bunches of grapes below these things, and the bunches of grapes are in veneration to Bacchus. This is a point from the northwest Taxila region. So worship of Bacchus was pretty much common. Examples of rituals and sacrifice. No need to go in much details. That's a famous coin struck by the Gupta for the horse sacrifice. This is another Gupta coin where there is some ritual going on. If you don't know what it is, it's quite interesting. The king is standing in the center, and there are two figures, one man and one woman, doing something to him. We don't know what they are doing. And he's obviously holding his hands in salutation. So it's pretty interesting what exactly is going on here. This is just a generic depiction of a Kushana king for performing sacrifice in an altar. I think we are running out of time, but quick run through depictions of temples. So if you're talking about temples, there are some depictions on temples on coins. Some of them are quite beautifully depicted as structural temples, some only as sanctuaries holding the god. This is again one of the Gupta Panchala coins of a god called Jayamitra, and this is probably the god of victory, Jaya, sort of shown in a sanctuary. This is again a very simplistic form of showing a kind of a linga within a sanctuary. So various ways of how temples can be shown on coins as well. Two later examples, that's one of the last slides. Kushan coin showing Skanda, Kumara, and Vishaka, three different gods enclosed in a sanctuary again. Interestingly, an East India Company coin from a completely different time and space showing a Gopuram. And this again has this pun about, because the coin was denominated as a pagoda. So it says two pagodas in English, and as if people, coming back to your question, why people write things with visual descriptions to show this interesting pagoda on the coin itself. And lastly, Islam is not something that people associate with iconography, but a remarkable example of the great syncretic traditions of India, coin struck by Akbar in his last regnal year 50, which is 1605, showing Rama and Sita on obverse. And just in the aftermath of when Tulsidas' Ramacharitamanas had gained this kind of popularity, interestingly reflected in this. I think that's the last one. So thanks a lot.
I'm afraid that I hope you're going to be around in the lunch hour.
Yes, no problem. And again, if anybody wants to have questions about the original topic, I'm very much willing to discuss that topic as well. Thank you.
So, about the paucity of coins in that period, feudal, what we call feudal, is that really so?
Not according to me.